From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Outgoing President Donald Trump has reportedly discussed granting himself, his family, and his lawyer preemptive pardons before he leaves office. While many see this as an admission of guilt, the president has countered that he has been the victim of a four-year-long witch hunt. While it seems clear to at least 80 million Americans that Trump did not deserve a second term, the question remains, how will history judge Trump and his enablers years from now? Joining me is author David Rothkopf. He's a commentator who has written extensively on politics, power, and national security. His books include Great Questions of Tomorrow, National Insecurity, Power, Inc., Superclass, and Running the World. He's taught international affairs at Columbia, Georgetown, and Johns Hopkins universities. And he joins me to discuss his new book, Traitor, A History of American Betrayal from Benedict Arnold to Donald Trump. Welcome to the program, David.
Pleasure to be here.
So the word traitor is very strong. It's a very serious word. It carries a huge weight. Why do you use that word to describe Donald Trump?
Well, I think it's very important that we choose precisely the right words to describe somebody like Donald Trump. And I think, in fact, part of the reason that Donald Trump has had 4 years as president and had some success in American politics is that people tend to use words that normalize his behavior. But if in any other circumstances you had an individual who reached out in the middle of a campaign for the aid of America's foremost foreign enemy, asked them to help him get elected by interfering in the campaign, they actually interfered in the campaign. He then followed that up by rewarding them with policy benefits, from attacking NATO to giving them free license to do what they wished in Syria, to pulling out of treaties like the INF treaty. And he defended them, and he deferred to their leader. And as part of his defense, he attacked our FBI and our CIA, weakened the United States, and empowered that enemy. Well, you wouldn't use any other word other than traitor to describe that behavior. He has, in the definition of the word, betrayed his country by putting his own interests ahead of our national interests. And he's done it in other ways beyond this original sin of his collusion with the Russians. He's done it in betraying the country by putting his political interests ahead of the interests of now 270,000 dead Americans, 13 million Americans infected with this disease. He did it in the case of Ukraine. He's done it over and over again. And in fact, when you look at all of history, which is what I did in this book, I don't think you can come to any other conclusion than not only is he a traitor, but he's done more damage than anybody else who has ever been subject to that term.
The Mueller investigation, which was supposed to uncover collusion with Russia between the Trump campaign and the Russian government, has just been subsumed in confusion. And a lot of that stems from the way in which Attorney General William Barr characterized the very first public description of that report and its conclusions. And it seems as though the actual report, what it actually found, has been lost in the details, has been, you know, really buried, has been the buried story. Do you think that that's a big problem with how Americans might hesitate to see Trump as a traitor?
Absolutely. I think the problems with the Mueller process started even before Attorney General lied about what its conclusions were. Mueller was told not to pursue Trump's financial ties with regard to Russia, which is critical in determining what his motivation may have been and what leverage they may have had over him. So his approach was incomplete. He did not pursue a number of people who obstructed interviews or refused to interview with him, including members of the president's family. He chose not to prosecute those people for lying or for their obstruction. He embraced the idea that he could not indict the president of the United States, which is dubious idea. Legal scholars dispute it. And then, of course, quite apart from the issue of collusion, and, you know, he did find almost 300 instances of Russians working with, talking to members of the Trump campaign, 40 instances of Russians meeting with the Trump campaign. But quite aside from this issue of collusion, which I believe actually the Mueller report, if you read it, demonstrates, he had an entire second section of the report that talked about the president's obstruction of justice, almost a dozen instances of obstruction of justice, where 1,000 federal prosecutors said, this is enough to indict somebody. These are violations of the law. And not only are they violations of the law, not only is the case against the president for obstruction of justice in this case extremely strong, but it does beg the question, why? Why obstruct justice? What was he hiding? People don't obstruct justice systematically like that unless it serves a purpose.
A lot of the motivations that one can glean from Trump's behavior is basically self-dealing, right? And I'm wondering if you can put his traitorousness, if you will, into historical context, because that's partly what your book does. How does Trump's betrayal of the nation compare to people who history has judged as having done similar things?
Well, Benedict Arnold wanted 30,000 pounds from the British in order to give up, essentially, the inside information about the fortifications at West Point and enable the British to take our fortress at West Point. British negotiated him down to 20,000. He also sought a commission in the British Army after it and protection in Britain. So was he self-motivated? Yes. When Aaron Burr, after he had to leave the vice presidency and do so in disgrace because he had shot Alexander Hamilton, sought his next great adventure, he decided he wanted to found another country to the west of the United States and was charged with treason for that. And that was purely to advance his own economic and in a way political interests. We've had spies throughout our history who have done the same. Aldrich Ames, Robert Hansen, other of the most damaging spies that we faced have done it for their narrow personal interests. So the most common motivation is self-interest. Now, of course, we had the Confederacy and there were some broader economic and social ideological underpinnings of that movement. But at the end of the day, the Confederates who launched the war against the North did so again in their self-interest. People who put themselves ahead of their country often end up being labeled traitors.
Does Trump's do his actions stem also from a deep misunderstanding or just simply ignorance of the U.S. Constitution? You couldn't find a less experienced person to assume the presidency than him. He seemed to be this very destructive combination of a self-dealer and a very ignorant person.
Yes. It's hard to argue with that. It sounds like, some terrible script that Hollywood would reject. But yes, He was a crook all his life. He was a lousy businessman all his life. He was a con artist all his life. And he was also a bad student who was not interested in learning and thought he knew everything he needed to know all his life. And that carried forward into this job. He had no idea what the Constitution said. And frankly, when he had surrounded himself with the entire apparatus of the United States government, he asked people to say that it said what he wanted it to say. So, you know, he got into this whole notion that the Second Amendment of the Constitution essentially gave the President of the United States unlimited power, that he could do anything that he wanted, that he couldn't commit a crime. Now, this is a kind of an extension to the extreme of this idea of the unitary executive that some right-wing scholars like Antonin Scalia and William Barr have embraced. But it goes beyond the beyond, because, you know, we have to face it. You know, Donald Trump is not super intelligent man. Otherwise, he might have actually done something successfully in his life other than carry out one con until it got him to the next con.
One of the most shocking things that he has done has happened just in the past month or so, and obviously too late to get into your book, which I'm assuming took months to write, which is his overt attempts to overturn the election results. He has been, from day one, even before the election, talking about how if he lost, it would be because the election was rigged. He has continued that thread. His actions, unfortunately, have not been characterized, I think, strongly enough by mainstream media as a coup attempt, which is essentially what trying to overturn an election is. And most recently, his newly pardoned General Michael Flynn, former General Michael Flynn, has told Trump to suspend the Constitution, enact martial law, and have a re-election in order to win. This is, to me, one of the most egregious aspects of what he has done. It seems to not be getting as much attention, perhaps because he's on his way out.
Well, first of all, you're absolutely right. This has not gotten enough attention. People haven't used the words they should, and the word they should be using is coup. If somebody, you know, the power in the United States government, the power in a democracy is vested in the people. If somebody attempts to take away the power from the people, that's a coup. And that's exactly what he did. The people spoke. Joe Biden, it looks like, will have won by 8 million popular votes and 36 or something electoral votes. He had a very substantial margin. There's no question about it. It's impossible to challenge. And all the challenges that Trump has put up have been shambolic because they're founded in nothing. They're founded in nonsense. So you would think, well, maybe this is just a show, but it's not, because he's pushing the media, he's pushing the legal system. He believes that he's put in place justices on the Supreme Court who are going to rule in his favor and enable him, under false pretenses, to take away the decision from the American people. He's even said, and had people associated with him said, that the election should be invalidated for no reason. Apropos of your prior point, by the way, I would advise no one ever attempt to write a book on a guy like Donald Trump and his crimes while he is still in office. Because the problem I had was every day I would sit down to finish the book and there would be a new crime.
Right.
this book could have gone on, you know, indefinitely. So
a journalist who has a daily deadline, and by the time you finish recording your show, things have changed because there's something new and crazier that has happened.
I've been in that position too. Right. And I have to say, I will empathize with you next year when you will wake up in the morning and go, but nothing happened.
Nothing changed over 24
right,
hours.
Right, exactly.
So let's talk about how you think moving forward, what's going to happen with Trump. I mean, there were still 70 million people that voted for Trump. You could maybe say some of them did so purely out of economic self-interest, but there is still a good chunk of them who voted for him because they truly believe everything he says. They believe what Trump says over what their own eyes tell them. And he is leaving office with having raised more than $170 million for his next con, this pack that he has put together. And he's going to continue to do damage, convincing tens of millions of Americans that he has been the victim and the hero rather than the traitor. How will history judge a man that so many Americans see as a hero?
Well, I think history will judge him very harshly. I think, you know, this book and other books, and I think there have been something like 1,200 books written on Trump so far, have all essentially come to the conclusions that you've outlined here in these questions. He's a liar. He's ignorant. He's the least experienced president ever to come into office, the only president who never had any public service experience prior to coming to office. He lied 20,000 times in office. He betrayed the country in manifold ways. He self-dealt to himself, to his family. He undercut the security of the United States. And then he attempted to undercut democracy. And oh, by the way, we've forgotten all this, but a year ago at this time, we were in the midst of the impeachment of Donald Trump, which also took place. So he's going to be judged harshly. But I think, with regard to your question, the 74 million people who voted for Donald Trump will also be judged harshly. Right. They will be judged harshly for allowing themselves to tune out facts, tune out the stories of the world that they didn't want to hear, lock themselves in the information ecosystem, and ECHO ecosystem, of Breitbart and Fox and OAN and these other fake news media, because it's more comfortable for them. And they essentially said, we don't want to hear about science if science is hard for us to deal with. We don't want to hear about demographic change if demographic change is hard for us to deal with. We don't want to deal with global reality if it's hard for us to deal with. And they are the ones responsible for this. They are the ones who empowered the least qualified, most corrupt president in American history. And I think they may be the ones who weaken the United States to the point that we can't recover.
Well, so there's the voters, you know, those people who've believed Trump over all else. But then there's also the very clearly self-dealing, power-hungry Republican officials, lawmakers and others, and cabinet officials who, you know, went from denouncing Trump in early, in the early part of his campaign to embracing him. You know, the Ted Cruz's and the Marco Rubio's, you've got the William Barr's and the Mitch McConnell's and Lindsey Graham's. These are people who, because of whom Trump has continued to maintain power. Had they held the Constitution above Trump, he might not have even finished out his term.
Well, that's right. I mean, they certainly showed no principle. They thought that Trump would empower them to advance their goals. And their goals tended to be serving their donors. There is a con at the center of the con. The con at the center of the con is that a few people, the richest Americans, the 1%, recognized that if they threw a little red meat to those 74 million people, played to their racial fears or their racial prejudices, played to a few of the issues that evangelicals and others were raising, that they could then gain enough power that they could advance their real agenda. The real agenda is not getting rid of abortion. The real agenda is not gun control. The real agenda is getting rid of taxes, empowering corporations, getting rid of regulations, enabling more black money to flow into politics, rigging the system more with gerrymandering so they can cling to power as a minority power, as a minority party, and, you know, preserve their own interests. And that's the con, because red America, the 74 million Americans who voted for Trump, were actually the ones who were most damaged by Trump.
Shouldn't Trump's enablers be followed by the stink of Trumpism everywhere they go here on out. It would be very interesting to see. Already you're seeing Republicans opposing some of Joe Biden's appointees, claiming that they are, you know, not behaving properly, and they don't have the moral standing to do so.
Oh, I mean, they have no moral standing. They've lost their moral standing. They backed a man who is a rapist, who's responsible for the death of 270,000 Americans, 80% of whom perhaps would not have died had he pursued normal policies, who sold out his country multiple times. Who,
separated who, thousands of children from their families.
Put them in cages, et cetera, et cetera. One atrocity after another, they sat by and they empowered it. And then, you know, Neera Tanden is nominated to become the director of the Office of Management and Budget, a super talented, brilliant woman. And they said, oh, she can't become the secretary, the director of Office of Management and Budget, because she sent tweets that hurt their feelings, you know, and it's absurd. But
and there,
I don't
of course,
think
there's people on the left who oppose Neera Tanden for different reasons, because of the way in which she has attacked progressives. And, you know, you could sort of make valid criticisms of her based on that. But the right wing and Republicans to claim that her tweets have hurt their feelings, certainly I agree with you on that point.
Well, no, I understand. And I, by the way, I, you know Neera, and I think Neera has probably done more for progressive causes than a lot of her critics on the left have done themselves. So, you know, I think there's a defense of her. But having said that, without getting into the issues that, you know, trouble the Democratic Party, I'd like to go back to your notion that, mm-hmm. you know, that there, you know, ought to be a kind of permanent stink on these people who work to support Trump. And I would go further. If we don't hold them accountable for the laws that they broke, if we don't hold Trump accountable, Barr accountable, people who obstructed justice accountable, people who enabled the Trump to pursue personal interests, et cetera, if we don't prosecute them, then it's going to happen again. Right. And we know this because that has been the pattern. Nixon violated the law, was pardoned. We had it happen again a few years later in Iran-Contra. Reagan and people in the Reagan administration violated the law, and they were pardoned. Obama made the mistake of not prosecuting people who used torture. Which he
from
should
the Bush
have.
Administration, right? Absolutely, and that's a really good question to end on. People are already there's already a lot of pressure on Biden to not pursue charges or any kind of investigations of Trump, the Trump family, etc. And I'm assuming you think that he should.
He definitely should, and you know he initially said that he didn't want to put his thumb on the scale, and then subsequently he said we have to focus on healing and other issues. Well, you know, if he does that, I will be shouting as loud as anybody else that that's a mistake. You don't heal by simply trying to feel better. You heal by getting better. And the way you get better is sending an unmistakable message to elites in the future that they are not above the law and that they will be prosecuted if they abuse the trust of the American people. Donald Trump thinks he can get away with it. History suggests he might be able to get away with it. It is going to be up to Joe Biden to ensure that he doesn't get away with it.
I want to thank you so much on that note, David, for joining us today. Good luck with your book.
Thanks very much.
My guest has been David Rothkopf, author and commentator. He's written extensively on politics, power, and national security. We've been discussing his new book called Traitor, A History of American Betrayal from Benedict Arnold to Donald Trump. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupatsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.